Welcome to Panel by Panel. We take the story arcs of our favorite books and we read them from front to back. Story arcs like Civil War, like DC Crisis on Infinite Earths, like Secret Wars, like you name it, we're going to read it if we haven't already. We take the story arc from beginning to end and we tell you what we like about it. And then you get to be a part of the conversation when we go in depth and break the whole story down. You should have already read and listened to the previous Panel by Panel episode where we covered DC's Crisis on Infinite Earth. Again, joining me today, we're going to go in depth here with Chris Wisdom,
hey.
Mike Woodard,
hello,
and as always, GD himself, George Doro.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Mike here, and I'm just going to welcome you to part two of Panel by Panel's in-depth look at Crisis on Infinite Earths. And to get you caught up, I'm throwing it straight over to Chris and George.
So young Superman, Dr. Light, and Pariah head into the heart of the fortress because they're going to try and destroy the power source. They're going to try and destroy his machine. So...
Right.
And meanwhile, everybody's still battling these rock creatures.
Yep. They're using the moment of distraction to go destroy this machine.
Right. And Kal-El and Kal-El are leading the team, and Supergirl, yep. The older Superman, he gets hit hard. And he's, oh, that actually hurt. And he gets knocked down.
Yeah, he learns that pretty early on, because yes. That's when he realizes, he's like, holy crap, I'm bleeding. What is that?
Yeah.
and that's another one of those well-drawn things, because you saw that horror in Batman's face earlier, and in this one, you're looking at a Superman that he doesn't know what it means to bleed, and here he is bleeding. So,
and that eggs not necessarily Supergirl on to do something she shouldn't have.
Well, no, that's even preceding, because so young Superman, Dr. Light, and Pariah go to find the machine and destroy it. As Superman's setting up to do it, he's blasted from behind by the anti-monitor, and it's his scream that causes Supergirl to come charging in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as she comes in, Dr. Light's doing what she can to hold off the monitor. He's not having any of it. So now it just becomes this melee battle between the anti-monitor and Superman. Superman's not holding his own. And all you see are panels of red streak going in the background of each panel. And you can tell Supergirl's getting closer and closer and closer till finally she happens upon the scene where Superman's lying on the ground, beaten, and the monitor's about to give him the death blow.
Mm-hmm.
She flies in, cracks him in the face.
Yeah,
and starts
she does.
Laying into him. He's doing, I mean, again, he's shrugging it off.
Not totally. I mean, he takes damage.
He does. He takes damage, but he's not to be deterred from his ultimate goal, and he's going to destroy Superman. So she gets in his face some more. She starts to crack his armor, starts to expose it. And this is where you find out that armor is more functional than just the costume that the monitor wore. It houses his energy. So the solar collector, this thing that they're going to destroy, it funnels all that energy that he collects from the dead positive matter and universes, mm-hmm. funnels it into this suit, and it really amplifies his power. So this is how he makes use of all these universes that he's destroyed.
Yeah. And in the background, Dr. Light is watching Supergirl just go at anti-monitor over and over, completely selflessly, and this is where she switches to an inspired hero.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what super people are supposed to do in the world, is inspire you to do great things.
Mm-hmm.
You're so traumatized, man.
I'm just saying.
You're so traumatized. Go listen to the Breaking the Panel BVS to understand why Chris is in a trauma shower.
Something to keep in mind here, guys, is we're seeing a Supergirl that we've never seen before.
I agree.
You know, this her character has always taken a second seat to the Superman character. You know, she's always been the girl, for lack of a better term. And to see her step up like this, my memory of this scene was me just going, damn.
And in my view, I was aware of Supergirl, but this was the first comic that I actually read that had Supergirl as a character in it. So I really didn't have a whole lot of past history to base it on. They did all right in making her interesting to me, which I I had no interest in reading her ever before. So, in her last moment, in her last moments there, good on them.
Yes, I agree.
They were this was very much about clearing her character out of the way. They'd tried to give her a book of her own for a long time, and it just never sold that well. Again, in my memory of the time. So they knew that she was one of the ones that was going to be cleared out in this storyline. And I really love how they chose to make it happen. It was very much a sacrifice. All the good points in Crisis, well, all had to do with sacrifice, which ties back into what Charles had to say earlier about the Christ myth and, the fact that he was the first superhero as far as, stories go.
Well, and they added the sacrifice was given weight. All of those characters that sacrificed were given this gravitas and stakes that they hadn't had before. Even earlier when you saw, I can't remember which issue it was, at the beginning of issue 5, maybe 6, when Batgirl and Supergirl are having their talks, and Batgirl's like, how do we fight the inevitable? Especially me. I'm just a person. You have powers. I can't do anything. And Supergirl's like, hey, that's what we do. That's why we put on these costumes, is we fight to give others hope. And those two, it goes into what Mike was talking about as the girl, not even just necessarily the damsel in distress or the girl lesser than Superman, but the younger of the two. So it was always very light stories, very fun stories. And even Batgirl fell into that. It wasn't, you didn't have a lot of weight with those stories, but they made these two girls women and adults just before you see this happen.
And even in that particular scene you're referencing, you see the plasma or antimatter wall coming through the world, and Supergirl still flies off from that conversation to save a plane from it, even though knowing they can't stop at that moment, they can't stop the antimatter from coming. So she still does what she does. So here she is, charging in, badass as hell, and beating the crap out of the monitor. At the same time, you're getting flashes to Psycho Pirate burning out, and you see, I never saw the Flash get put into this electro gel, but apparently he's being suspended in this. It's either electricity or gel, both, something like that, holding him there physically so Psycho Pirate can affect all these other planets that he was affecting, universes he's affecting, rather. And, of course, the Flash is the Flash, man, right? He can get out of just about anything, anywhere, and they really worked that into the story. So you see that start to build as she's wailing against anti-monitor. So it makes me think too, quite possibly, that it's because anti-monitor is being distracted and his power is waning as well at this point.
Well, and he's distracted because he's decided to set his sights on somebody that maybe he should have made sure that the heroes were dealt with before he decided to focus on someone else.
So it ends up being, as Supergirl reaches her crux, the Flash frees himself and starts figuring some things out. So what is Supergirl's crux here? We already talked about with the cover of the book. The anti-monitor squashes her like a bug.
Well,
kind of.
So as they're fighting and she breaks his shell away, she just takes one more last effort and she flies him into the heart of his solar collector, using him to destroy it. Hoping in that not only is it going to destroy him, but it's going to remove his ability to generate his power. So you see it in the panels is the way they're drawn. Like, it's a foregone conclusion to me as you read the book that she's going away, because you see like she's consumed by this radiation, this energy. So had the death blow not come, I'm still not convinced that she wouldn't have died. But then you see a death blow and it's massive, just takes out her middle section.
Yeah.
A gut punch in the full sense of the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have that panel of Kal-El screaming Kara as he's horrified at what he sees. So.
Right. But at the same time, right, because that's kind of the end there, but instead of anti-monitor going and destroying everybody, I can't remember if there's more battle, but the Flash breaks free and he goes over to the machine.
Oh, no. That's later.
That's later?
That's later. Yeah, that's the next issue, because the anti-monitor gets in his little rock ship.
So
and
that's,
leaves
but I thought he just left because he was running out of power, because she did kind of mortally wound him.
His body was destroyed.
So yes.
Okay. So he had to leave. So then they actually all go back to Earth, because then you have the funeral for Supergirl.
Okay, so that was the end of Act Two. All right. So yeah, I got my cruxes a little bit off there. So the end of Act Two, yeah, so she gets the fatal blow, but in sacrificing her life, achieved what she was trying to do, which was tear up his machine and take him down a number of pegs. I mean, she didn't take him out because he was able to get in his ship and fly away, taking, I guess, presumably the Flash and Red Tornado's already on Earth there because they dealt with him there. And so he takes the Flash and Psycho Pirate with him, essentially. And they go back to the Matter Universe. And I knew, I it's not over, but I knew at that point, I was like, man, this felt like it could have been a great final battle, and it's not. What are we going to do now? And then I thought, why didn't you just end it there? This feels like, at that moment, to me, it feels like you're really trying to stretch this out, and you shouldn't have. It's one of those one last tour with the band, but really the last tour should have been the last tour, because now it's just overdone and bad. But so they go and they start doing the funeral and this and that. But you what we get later and what we start seeing here is Brainiac makes an appearance here, right? Luthor goes and finds him, or Luthor and Brainiac are working together. And we start seeing what would happen. It's like, hey, all the supers are out there fighting this massive bad guy. And some of the bad supers are too. But all the criminal geniuses are starting going, we got five Earths here that are unprotected. What can we do with that? And you see Luthor and Brainiac start to pull together a Legion of Doom, if you will. And I was like, oh, all right, I'll play this one out. I kind of like where you're going.
Oh. You're ahead again, but that's
okay. Damn it. You still get why I ended up liking it.
Yeah, I gotcha. But we start seeing, in previous issues, the Anti-Monitor had referred to Darkseid, and that they were going to have to deal with him. In this issue, we finally get to see Apocalypse and Darkseid, and he's like, you know what? I know what's going on, and try me. We see the Green Lantern Corps finally free and revive the Guardians. Everybody's back on their Earths. Cyborg is examining Red Tornado. You get to see that he's gotten some upgrades. As the Atom is inside examining him and they're trying to fix him, they have no idea what they're looking at, honestly. And and T.O. Morrow, who created the Red Tornado, as he looks in through the screens, he's like, I have no idea what this is. I don't know what happened.
Yes, so, I remember that.
There's a lot of wrap up to the previous storylines, and I guess wrap up's probably not appropriate. But
no, I think you're right. They were tying threads together. Because there are Earths that are gone that we have heroes from still, and it is kind of a, we need to put a pin in these little moments so you're not wondering what's going on, so you can focus on the 5,000 pins we still have loose.
It's the beginning portion of this book, I think, is just a take a breath and then let's get back into it. And when you get back into it, you're back at Quard in the antimatter universe. You see the Monitor overseeing the construction of another machine, you know, Death Star 2.
Yes, I was going to make a Star Wars reference as well.
But you see the Weaponers of Quard
section we kind of get the idea of, or was it in the second act that we get the idea of the Anti-Monitor and how he built his Thunderers, which became the Shadow Demons? At some point, we get that backstory of the Anti-Monitor and how he had he built an actual army to take over the universes.
Yeah,
and
that's later on.
Them with power.
Yeah, that's later on. But the Quardians were always, they're separate from the Shadow. The Shadow guys. Am I right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, it's a little,
I think so.
In my head, because when it comes to Quard and the Quardians and that kind of thing, I flash back to early Green Lantern stories.
Mm-hmm. And Yellow Lantern Rings.
Yeah. And the even before the Yellow Lantern Rings.
It's Sinestro. Exactly. The Weaponers being classic bad guys.
Anti-Monitor's involvement with Quard was kind of tacked on, you know, to feed this storyline. So I'm not 100% certain how it all kind of shakes down when it comes to that kind of stuff.
But
it's one of the confusing parts of the story for me.
And, of course, the parts that we're skipping over a little bit is how much backstory you get with Oa and the Lantern Corps. And they do a quick – you know, people bitch about origin stories in movies all the time. I've seen the origin story of the Lanterns a lot. And, you know, how they start off with this, and these lizard people became this thing, and that didn't work. So now then they made machines. And that, of course, was the Martian Manhunters. And they kind of revolted.
Just the Manhunters. Just Manhunters.
Just.
Yeah, you're confusing the Manhunters that were created by the Owens with the Martian.
John Jones.
Fine. The Manhunters.
This is why we need a crisis. Terminology is important.
Yes, you're right. So what's important is not naming everything the same damn thing. It seems like you're from Georgia where everything's Peachtree Street. You know, everything doesn't have to be the same thing. Anyway.
And then there was yet another Manhunter who is unrelated, but yes. We won't get into that.
George, you're referring to one of my favorite Batman storylines?
Yes, yes.
Love that thing. Yeah, but that's a digression.
Yes. We'll get to that in another episode.
So then you lead into what Charles was talking about in the Flash escaping and getting out of his Jell-O prison. And as he starts to wreak havoc on Quard, he does it in such a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. You go ahead and you punch Psycho Pirate in the face. And you're like, listen up, we're going to run a little bit.
Yeah.
And he holds the Psycho Pirate out in front of him and he uses that Flash speed of his and he goes and starts getting in front of Weaponer's faces.
Yep.
And he makes them do what they want, what he wants them to do.
Which is attack anti-monitor.
Attack anti-monitor. Yeah.
Which I thought anti-monitor version 2.0 was really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they drew him very well. You know, the new armor.
Yeah.
You could obviously tell from the artwork that whether they spoke it or not, he learned some things from those battles. And he changed some things to take on the supers. As he needed to. It was a nice moment. I dug it. I definitely dug the Flash using Psycho Pirate as a weapon. He's like, no, you're hurting me. He's like, dude, you do this or I'm gonna really mess you up. And you also start getting a little backstory too on Earth with the other Flashes, with Jay Garrick and is it Kid Flash? I think. And Kid Flash had stopped being Kid Flash because of some disease that he wasn't telling anybody about. That when he used his speed power, it was killing him. Mm-hmm. So it was like nice little drop-in moments inside of this book to help me keep up. Because obviously there's lots of other stories going on in side arcs and that stuff. So they're building a new strike team. They know that the anti-monitor is not done. And they're working on this and they're starting to build the strike team. And as they basically come back for a second strike...
Well, wait.
Go ahead.
Because we haven't gotten there yet.
All right, where are we?
We're at the Quardians are attacking the monitor.
Yes.
And they're keeping him busy, and Flash just keeps throwing more Quardians at him. And then he goes and vibrates into the antimatter cannon.
Right, but he starts running backwards, right?
Right, yep. He starts running backwards.
He figures out really quickly that it's going a certain way to collect energy, so if he can run fast enough the other way. Because doesn't he say something about I can run through time or I can run through universes, I can surely run through this or something like that? Something along those lines.
Something like that, yeah. And he talks about running against the flow of the antimatter because then he can force feed it back in the machine the other way. And that's so the monitor's outside getting beat up pretty good by the Quardians. His new armor starts to get cracks and stuff in it. But the Flash just keeps doing his deal. And
hey man, here's where we get the payoff from the Batman Joker scene.
Yep.
And he starts seeing flashes of different universes. And he doesn't understand what's going on, but he feels himself slipping away. So he starts talking to the visions that are appearing, not knowing exactly mm-hmm. what they were. And apparently these were his appearances in other books, including that story. You see him end up with Batman and Joker, and then he still melts and dies. And it is a very powerful moment. I'm still, at this point, I'm still going, but that doesn't matter. It's the comics. Surely by the end of this book, he'll be back. No, he's not. I'm going to tell you, gentle listeners, now, this is it for The Flash at this time in space and the continuity. And it really, like you say, it really was heavy. It gives a lot of gravity to his sacrifice. But he ends up stopping that machine as well, right?
Yes. Yep. He destroys it and saps the energy that was created there. So the anti-monitor is without for a little bit.
So
Chris and Mike, I need you to spoil something for me. Does Barry Allen ever come back?
Yeah, in Flash Rebirth, and you're talking 20. I'm pulling the exact date right now because I can't remember the publishing date. I want to say it was 2010.
Okay.
That's you don't get Barry Allen back until 2010.
Holy cow, man. From 86 to 2010.
Telling you, dude, death mattered. Used to mean something. Yeah. Oh, no, 2009. So 1 year earlier.
Oh, then it doesn't matter. Yeah. Death means nothing.
But it was the same with Kara. That version of Supergirl, we don't get that back until just before that same time. It was when Superman Batman, that comic came out. So I want to say within the second year of publishing in that, maybe.
Okay.
That you get Kara back. Before that, you get things like, Mike, what was she called? That weird putty Supergirl from a pocket dimension. She was created by Lex Luthor in a pocket dimension, and she can shape change and stuff like that. So in the Death of Superman timeline, that's the Supergirl you have. I can't remember what the Matrix. The Matrix, I believe, is what she's called.
Okay.
That just sounds weird.
Yeah.
Sorry for the diversion. I just had
No, you're all right, because I was actually going to make a point about that. That's why I was looking up the publish date on Rebirth, because you won't see Barry Allen again until 2009.
And it was Rebirth Geoff Johns?
Yes.
So he now... How long has he been doing? He's not the creator of The Flash.
No.
Right? Because The Flash is way too old for that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he is the new daddy of The Flash. And basically, once he brought him back, he's been.
He's the new creative daddy for a lot in DC.
Well, yeah, no, I'm getting that. I'm totally getting that. But I've seen his name most associated with Flash stories, it seems like. Or maybe that's where I paid attention to it in. So I'm very glad that Flash did come back and Barry Allen Flash came back. And it's very interesting. So. Where do we get the One Earth versus the Strike? Because that is another Strike team that goes into this court again, right? They get another Strike team, right? They get young Kid Flash, and they get the two Supers together, and they get some new here. When do they get the Magics together?
Well, okay, so right now, that Flash's death leads into the issue with the Legion of Doom.
Okay.
And so and all of the heroes realize that they're all trapped on their respective Earths, but they don't know what the barrier is that's keeping them all there.
But we saw the Legion of Doom build that. Not the barriers, but we saw them coming together. So as soon as I saw the barriers, I knew it was them.
Yeah. So
as a reader.
Yeah, throughout the previous issues, you see Brainiac will show up and he'll get somebody. He'll pick up like Dr. Savannah, and he picked up Luther first, and he's flying around in his skull ship throughout these
Yes.
the multiverse, picking guys up. And then this is the payoff issue on all that.
And I found that to be cool because in many of the animations that I've watched, Brainiac and Luther team up quite often. So it's very neat to see how far back, at least to hear that it goes. And you can tell even from the way they work together, this is not the first project they've been on. So obviously, Brainiac and Luther have teamed up a few times over in the issues previous to this. I do like when they're doing their Legion of Doom, and he goes, basically, Luther of Earth 2 comes out and goes, who put that Luther in charge? I'm Luther of Earth 2. He goes, you're right. We don't need two Luthers. Zap. Done. Yeah. I was like, oh, nice. Totally. It's that Deadpool moment where he shot Francis in the head. Totally needed that to happen right then. That was really cool. Yeah, you got all kind of, you got Simon mouthing off, you've got different things going on, and they have barriered off some Earths, but haven't they taken over most of two or three Earths?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because they do a message at this point to the remaining Earths saying, we've taken over, and we're about to send some people your way, and you better do what you're told, or a whole lot of people are going to die. And I thought that was a great... Holy crap, this isn't enough that we're dealing with the Anti-Monitor and apparently getting ready to go back to the beginning of time. That we're having to deal with all this and the deaths of heroes and everything else. And now we're having to deal with this petty nonsense. It's not really petty once the things shake out. But, theoretically once things would shake out. But come on, man. It's one of those moments. Come on, man. Be cool. And Pariah, there's this... court scene, right? And I don't think I'm getting ahead here. I think it's kind of playing all in the middle of all this.
Yeah, it's at the UN, I believe.
Okay, he's at the UN, and that's he disappears right before Brainiac and Luther do their announcement. I think
yes, because they do their announcement at the at the UN, because Pariah's talking to them, giving his knowledge of everything, and then he disappears.
And I love the shock on his face there too. I'll tell you that, and that drawing was good, because here we are, all of us going, all the Earths are saved. Pariah is just kind of hanging out. He's cool, and then he's like, "Holy crap! I'm being called again to destruction. What the hell?"
Yeah,
and it gives you that feeling too as a reader. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then Brainiac's disembodied head appears above the same UN council that he was just addressing.
Yes,
and Lex Luthor is also appearing, kind of egging the villains on, saying, "Hey, it's time to act. They're at their weakest point now. We're unified. It's now time to strike."
Yep. And then you start getting different things going on. Now I'm honestly hazy again on what happens next.
Somebody else want to take it? I feel like I'm taking all the.
Well, I know that ultimately somehow the Anti-Monitor goes back in time.
Yo, that's later. This whole issue
is foreshadowing to that at this point. We got just a myriad of scenes of different heroes kind of reacting to what's gone on and wondering, okay, well, there are things going on here we still need to address. And then is this where it turns out that they see that they're on no, that comes late. I'm thinking of where the Earths are melded and they realize they're in places where they don't belong.
Yeah, that's a little later. I'm not sure how much it's there.
Just a lot of exposition at this point, I think. It was kind of spinning its wheels for me at this point, so that's why it's not sticking too much in my memory.
Yeah, well, in this issue, I think a lot of this was everybody answering that question, where are the villains? What's going on with the villains that got taken earlier? And this is just showing, I think this is just a good illustration of the pettiness of villains, that, that we got some breathing room and now we're going to try and take over Earth again.
Yeah, so you got a lot of hero versus villain action going on those three Earths.
Yes, you start getting those battles.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. But what issue are we in here?
So that would have been issue 9.
And issue 9, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So we're
coming up to the end of that.
Right, so we're moving towards the end. I don't remember how they settle the problem with the villains, but something happens. I know at some point something happens and Brainiac has to flee because something bad happened.
Yeah, well, okay, so at the end of 9, Simon blows Brainiac up, and then he's got Luthor dead to rights. And
right, oh, yeah.
Like the quote is, "Simon says Luthor must die as well." And as he's starting to torture Luthor, his head all of a sudden explodes, and you find out that, you can't exactly kill Brainiac, and if you blow him up on his ship, guess what? He's probably going to come right back and shoot you in the face.
Oh, not in the face. He blew his whole brain
in the back
off.
Of the head. Yeah.
That was really brutal. I was not expecting that.
Yeah. And it's pretty illustrative, too, because you see the brain matter on the right side of the panel. So. Now, this issue, what I liked about this issue, we're talking issue 10 now, is they have two things going on each page. So there's the color panels, which progress the story as you know it.
Oh, and then there's something at the bottom, right?
Yes, at the bottom, there's a couple black and white panels.
Because Lila is doing a whole tape session of what she knows to carry on what the Monitor had done.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. See, I always expected the Monitor to come back, and he never came back either.
And there's he will a few years later.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, in this story.
But yeah, not in this story. Yeah. It's not, and there's some exposition and there's some things because we still haven't been introduced to Superboy Prime, but now he's mentioned. You're introduced to Superboy Prime in some of the tie-in issues, but not in proper yet. So
okay.
And there's a lot of things of the heroes on each of the worlds now are starting to get the upper hand on the villains that had taken over, that had them trapped. Like you see on Earth S, where they had the Shazam family trapped. The Atom has gotten there, and he cuts the gag off of Billy Batson, and Billy Batson's, of course, finally able to say Shazam.
Well, don't they say something along the lines of, they told me to free you first. I don't know why. And he cuts the thing off and goes, oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah. Here, I've got it actually in front of me. Said, don't wiggle. I was told to cut off your gag. Only nobody told me why. Still don't know why. What a kid can do that the rest of us can't.
Yeah.
And then he shows him.
Yeah. So. Shazam. I'll always hear Gomer Pyle when that kid says, I'm just saying.
So now what it is that scares Brainiac away is one of those other big things that it, as a DC reader, you probably should have asked in the first episode or in the first issue, mm-hmm. Where's the Spectre?
See, I don't know much about the Spectre. Obviously, he seems to be one of the most powerful beings in the universe.
He is, Mike or George, if you know off the top of your head, go ahead and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in the DC Comics pantheon, he is number two to God.
I believe that
he's so on the Marvel side, Living Tribunal, Spectre. Okay. That's probably the closest analog to.
So I'm familiar with Living Tribunal, but not super familiar. But I get what you're relating to there.
Okay.
So this is where they start collecting the magics together, because they're mm-hmm. starting to put together a plan on three fronts. I want to say, you know, physical attack front, the magics are doing their thing. And when I say the magics, I mean, you know, Spectre.
That still comes later.
That's golly. So this really is just a spinning the wheels kind of moment in these last couple of episodes going, all right, we're getting to the end, but here, let's wrap up. Yeah, I did read some of the bottom panels, Chris, that you're talking about, mm-hmm. where you had the main story, then you have that, the tapes. I skipped some of them. Some of them just didn't quite grab me, but I saw they were talking about Ran, and they're talking about, because Ran wasn't dealt with a lot, and that's R-A-N-N for those of you who are mm-hmm. unfamiliar. It was not dealt with a ton, but that's where Starfire is from?
No. Adam Strange.
It's Adam Strange.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Because I always want to call him Adam Warlock, because I only know two Adams in the comic universe, and it's those two.
Starfire is from a planet called Tamaran.
See, it's not my fault. They keep naming everything the same.
Fairly close.
So, all right. Well, let's get past the spinning the wheels part. What else is important before we get to the end? Because I know the Anti-Monitor says, if I can't defeat them here, I'll go back to where it started or something along those lines. And he disappears for a while. I mean, and not long enough that you kind of forget you're dealing with this guy, because you're dealing with the supervillains and you're dealing with the tapes and everything else.
Yeah. Well, so they make their strike teams, and you see a lot of people saying their goodbyes, and they figure out how they're going to transport everybody to face the Anti-Monitor. And they, when they finally face him, you see, I believe he's got Pariah trapped.
Yes.
And then everybody appears, and it's basically in kind of in nowhere.
Yes.
And so you're outside of all reality, and we're like, all right, here it is, let's do this. And that's when he, with his exposition, he's gonna tell you his plan.
Now, does Pariah talk about his story?
No, that's earlier on.
Earlier.
So when they
okay, that's important. Let's talk about that.
Okay. So when we talked about Krona creating the two, the antimatter and the matter mm-hmm. universe, and then he was imprisoned. The very next panel goes into Pariah, or the very next page then goes into Pariah's origin story. And his origin story is he wanted that same knowledge. He wanted to see the creation of the universe. So he created to set himself outside of the matter universe so that he could safely observe the origins of the universe.
Right.
It was an antimatter
box basically
yeah. that he was able to put himself in, and then he could go witness it. Well, when he did that, he set everything off. He set everything into motion. It allowed the Anti-Monitor, it woke up both the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor, but it gave the Anti-Monitor enough power that he was able to destroy Pariah's universe. And that was that was the first step to him being able to get more and more power.
So he is preserved inside the yes. box. That plays here. So that's important yes. to know. So what we got was, to summarize this, Krona, essentially by looking at the beginning of the universe, it was a really cool hand thing doing its thing. And by looking at it, he split the matter and antimatter universes. And then multiverse, the matter universe is weird. But then when Pariah does it later, presumably, that he made a rift, made a way for the anti-monitor to start taking over, destroying matter universes because mm-hmm. of he essentially made a connection with his box. You don't cross the streams. That's what it basically exactly. he crossed the streams. And so I'm not sure how he became immortal. Was that the monitor's doing?
I think it's because now he exists outside of everything.
Okay, because that wasn't quite explained, but that would make sense because he exists out of it because he was in that box when everything went down. all of a sudden he's destined to be drawn to the destructions. All right, you know, that makes sense. So that then, so now we jump back to where everybody's where outside of
nowhere.
Reality.
Yes, right, yeah. We're in nowhere. And Pariah says, you know, don't worry about me. I mean nothing, because they're trying to figure out how to save Pariah. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me. Destroy him. And that's when the anti-monitor just lays it out on the table. He's like, fool, you did nothing but open the antimatter portal to the dawn of time. Did you truly believe where scientific investigation could unleash forces great enough to destroy a universe? Mm-hmm. And he's saying that by you looking at it, that's all you did was give me the portal. You gave me the opportunity.
You just gave me a window to get through.
Yep.
Yep.
And now I'm going to show you what I can do with it.
Yes. Yeah, so they're essentially at the dawn of time, right? Or there's no.
No. They're
in nowhere.
Yep.
Which again is Marvel.
And well, different nowhere.
It's spelled correctly here.
But so you see all the heroes, they go full frontal assault. They're attacking, they're punching, they're kicking. Energy blasts are coming like crazy. Not even a scratch.
Yeah.
He sends them all back to where they came from. And then you see it. You see what Pariah saw. You see what Krona saw. And you find out that the hand that was reaching up at the dawn of time
is
the anti-monitor's hand.
To destroy everything in the matter universe at the dawn of time.
Yep.
Right?
And then you see another hand push back.
Well, they're leading into that, right? We see where the magics back on the Earth are putting all their magical energy together.
Nope. Nope. You see, now you see.
Oh, my God!
This is it. This is the Spectre first appearing, and he's gonna.
But I thought he had their power to do that appearance.
Well, he does, but it comes in the panel later. Just we're
okay. All right,
like,
all right.
Or the next page, because you see the Spectre stop his hand.
You're right.
And from breaking through, and that's when you see the ring of all the magic users around him, feeding him their power. Right.
And then, you know, and they do this fist bump and secret handshake and all this cool stuff. It's interesting. I liked it. It's cool.
Yeah.
So carry on, Chris, leading us through this. Because honestly, I don't have it straight in my mind. I remember these panels. I just don't remember them quite in continuity.
So we see that everything is, you see little windows. You see Krona being observing this going on, using the hand.
You're on the other side of the window, though, right? That was cool. Right. I loved that touch.
Yeah, you get to see Krona as he's looking out. So you're on the other side of the window from Krona. Exactly.
Yeah, that was
and you
cool.
see reality fracture, you see reality crack, and you see reality explode, and the universe ends. So then what we're left with at the end of that issue, which is issue 10, is shattered glass, essentially the remnants of all of the multiverse.
All right.
Which leads into issue 11.
So now you said there's a 1-2 punch from the writers. Was that Nate 9?
7-8.
What was the 1-2 punch that we kind of missed?
Supergirl's death.
Right?
Like a 30-second pause, and then you got the Flash's death. Right?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that was a 1-2 punch for sure. Yeah. So, all right, so the hand push. I know, that's where it did get a little crazy for me. It's like, okay, we're here. Final battle. This must be by the same writers of Mega Man, because it's not the same final. It's not the final battle. You defeat the final boss, and oh no, you get two more final bosses to fight.
This is where I think the second act ends, because this is where everything changes.
Okay,
things are brand new from here.
Yep.
So they had their battles with the monitor three times there in this in the second act. And this is where the third act begins. This is where we start leading into the climax of the series.
All right. Yeah, because now we're talking about that we're at the end of 9 or 10.
We just finished 10.
10. So, yeah, you got two more issues left, and the story's done.
Yep.
And how and big so are these issues?
In this issue, we learned that Earth has what has become what we would call these days rebooted.
Yep.
Yes. They wake up. Oh, yeah, that's right. So it's like a big flash. Anti-monitor's doing the Darth Vader no thing. And I don't know if he actually said that, but it was you see the hand pushback. You see these issues, right? And then who is it first? Is it Superman?
It's Earth 2 Superman.
Earth 2 Superman wakes up and or he's walking to work or something, and everybody's looking at him.
Yeah, he wakes up, and he's like, what the hell? Was this all a dream? Okay, well, I guess I'll go to work.
Yeah. And you see things aren't quite right. It's very interestingly done. I felt I enjoyed it. especially when I wanted to say J. Jonah Jameson. That's not right. When Perry White busts in, yeah. Like, I don't know who you are, man, but you need to get the hell out.
Yep. You're in my chair, buddy.
Yeah.
Because and you know going in that something's about to happen because it's the first time that we see on the very first page we see one Earth. We see no remnants of other Earths. We see them talk about what came before.
Oh, yeah, because at the beginning of each of these, you see like a previously on almost, but you see the multi-Earths.
Yep.
Yes, and then this one is, nope, you get it. But didn't they do an opening pager where it says there was a single universe and here's how everything evolved?
Well, yeah, in the beginning, there were many, a multiverse, infinitude, and then they talk about, it's just real quick within a few panels.
Yeah. So there you go. So we start seeing the Jay Garrick being in the wrong place, and we see him really Earth 2 Superman, Grandpa Man. Start. They're trying for humanity and exposition here. Some of it felt a little out of place, but where he's like, "I'll never marry Lois. She's gone. I've lost everything." That was kind of interesting. That was to a point that was interesting. I thought they carried it on a little too long. Later on, where he kind of runs away like a teenage girl, that part bothered me a little bit. It's like,
This is where the two Kal-Els are starting to put things together.
Yes.
That this is not the Earth that either of them really know. It mostly fits with the Earth One Superman's memory, but there are still things that they're coming across that don't make sense. Like Earth Two Superman came from a place where he was the publisher of the, what was it, the Daily Star, the Daily Sun.
Yeah.
And so he goes to the building where he knows his job is, and it turns out it's the Daily Planet, and he's sitting in Perry White's chair. Then they move on to the home of the Flash, and it's the Flash's home, but it's not the Flash that they were expecting. It turns out to be Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash, rather than Barry Allen, the Modern Age Flash or the Silver Age Flash.
Yep. Well, and even as they're heading there, they notice the sign that says "Welcome to the Twin Cities, Keystone City and Central City," and they're like, "Whoa!"
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and those are the two respective Flash's cities from the different universes. So now they're a twin city in this new Earth.
Yeah, it's. It was really is played out very well, and they ultimately go to the Flash's house. And isn't there another Flash that shows up, like Kid Flash?
Yeah, yes, Wally West.
And does he get his medical diagnosis here or a little bit later?
No, that comes later.
Okay.
We're referring to storylines that had happened, I think, in the Teen Titans, where he was a member for some time, but then he had to give it up because he was diagnosed that every time he's using his super speed, it was slowly killing him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's why he retired at the tender young age of 19 or whatever.
Yes. Yes. And because it doesn't really matter for continuity timeline wise. At some point in this area, he gets another diagnosis. Maybe it's after it's all done.
It's after it's all done.
After it's all done, essentially he's cured. The antimatter stuff flipped him. And it changed his powers to where he actually heals every time he runs as instead of the other way around, which I thought that was nice. It was a good wrap up. I know I jumped to the end there, but it is a good wrap. I thought it was a good thing to do there.
The reason that they go to the Flash's house is because they have this device there called the Cosmic Treadmill.
Cosmic Treadmill.
And this is what the Deus Ex Machina that they use to travel from one universe to another. So the Golden Age Kal-El says, I need to go back to my home. So let's get on the treadmill and get me there. But what they find out is when they get it up to the right speed, you know, 85 or whatever.
88 miles per hour, bitches.
It turns out that there's nothing out there but void. There are no other universes for him to travel to. That means that everything that he considered home is gone.
Right.
Krypton, even though it's just rubble now, that's all gone. His Lois is gone. Everything that he lived with and defended for years, it's all gone. So he's absolutely despondent at this point, and he just wants to go into the void.
Right, which was interesting, but at the same time, didn't seem Superman-y to me. I kind of got it, but they did, of course, they pulled him back by his cape, more or less. Okay. And when, it was a little, honestly, it was a little scary. They're at the edge of nothingness, and this whole time, there's always been something out there for everybody to go to, and people have died, and so many things have happened, and so many people remember but don't remember now at this point of what happened, and it's weird, and then there's nothing, and then Superman wants to kill himself and go into the nothing. Doesn't he feel like he's being called into it?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is perfectly understandable, because he's technically not really supposed to exist where he is.
Right, because, well, and they noticed it when they went and talked to the Garricks, because Jay recognized Kal-El,
but his wife did
not. His wife had no idea who he was.
Right, yeah. And they did explain some of that. It's just your same time bubble. You're at the crux of what happened when it happened, therefore you remember everything, whereas the ripples go out. And so supposedly, with a different lore of different places I've read, that will fade with time and your memories just become one and blah, blah, blah. I don't know if that happened here, and we'll find out in a little bit for sure about that. So they come back, and when they come back, I don't remember why, but when they come back, the treadmill explodes, and Superman's Superman 2, let's just call him, is despondent. He's realizing everything's gone, and Superman 1, you know, is staying almost by his side. He was always there when I needed him, and Alexander, no, that's later. So let's get to the end of this thing, because now I'm losing my mind. So we're down to one Earth, and what happens next? The Anti-Monitor is still out there.
Yeah, there's a whole boatload of exposition, and basically we get to the end of it, and we find out that this is the Anti-Monitor's universe, or at least that's what he declares to everyone, and you're all about to be destroyed.
Because somehow he shows up as like a big face in the sky or something like that, right?
He's basically the god of this one amalgamated universe.
Okay.
Yeah, so we get where all the heroes are gathered together. Everybody that was there at the beginning of time remembers the previous universes. So they realize that anybody that wasn't there, i.e. the general civil populace.
All right, Chris, take us home, man. So the Anti-Monitor is about to kill the universe. Yeah.
Like Mike said, there's a whole lot of expos in this as all the heroes start to understand what's going on, that they're on one Earth and everybody has to figure out what their place is on this Earth, if they have a place, who remembers them, who doesn't. Because like you've pointed out, if you weren't there when it happened, you have no idea what's going on. You have no recollection of these people. So unfortunately, people like Huntress and Robin, who are aged from Earth, those are Earth 2, Robin and Huntress, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So they just don't exist. Like, they physically exist on the Earth, but they have no history.
Yeah.
So everything that they knew, their entire world is gone. So you see people like that have to suddenly adjust. They talk about, we get to see Batman's parents die, so you should be happy, right?
Oh, come on, man.
But so you get to see some of these outbursts. You get to see how these heroes are dealing with it. You get to see a comatose Spectre as the Stranger and Dead Man try to figure out what's going on with him. You get to see some more shadow demons attack, and we deal with the fallout of that. And then everybody's like, "Well, if the Anti-Monitor is gone, how are their shadow
demons?"
That's
right. It's not blackness out there; it's the shadow demons.
Yep.
That's right.
And then Batman, Alexander, Luthor, and Robin go to ask Luthor what's going on, or what he knows about what's going on, and he has no clue because he wasn't there.
Right. He gets reset. But the Brainiac saw it coming, or sensed it coming, and fled a little bit. And he kind of got shut down, but a team goes after him because they figure out he can help.
And when they get to the ship, at this point, he's still shut down, so they're trying to figure out how to reactivate him. And then I want to say, is it the Challengers of the Unknown? Is that who's down there in the mines in South America?
I don't remember mines in South America. Sure.
It seems like it's the Challengers. They discover this portal or something to the antimatter. I mean, it's like Red Sky underground, and that's, you get to see this. All of a sudden, Pariah disappears. Alexander Luthor starts to feel the effects of antimatter starting to take over his body again, and then that's when you see the anti-monitor above, you see the Earth transported to the antimatter universe, and then all of a sudden the anti-monitor's head is up there in the sky saying, "Welcome to my universe, welcome to your doom."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that leads us into the last issue, I think.
Yep.
So what happened in the last issue? The end. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. I mean, it is a huge undertaking. That's why this show was so long to do, and we may release it in two parts. It is a huge undertaking to change this universe. I mean, it was such a big deal in the changes that they made. So take us through book 12. Mike, you want to jump on that?
Well, it's at this point, it's just the S has hit the fan. Things have gotten about as bad as they can. And it's all about, to go meta with it. I'm not going to get into the details at this point because, again, this is one of the parts that I'm a little hazy. But this last issue is very much about setting up a new status quo. So it's a last-ditch effort to face down the anti-monitor and win the day.
Yes.
And I know I'm just stating the obvious.
Now this is where all the matches come together, right?
Yep.
All right. I knew it happened somewhere in the story.
Yeah.
But you start building. There's two or three teams at this point. They're going to hit with every last ditch effort, right? Hit with everything they have. So you got the magics coming together. In fact, one of the lanterns is a magic lantern, right?
Yeah. Alan Scott.
Of Earth 2.
See, I didn't know anything about him. That was new to me. I thought that was kind of cool. So you had the magic lantern.
Yeah, the Golden Age.
Good.
The Golden Age lantern was his powers are based on mystical powers rather than the scientific powers of the modern age lantern.
Gotcha. And so you have all these magics coming together. What else is what other teams are going on? Because I know that wasn't the only team.
One significant team, the ragtag group of heroes of like C level heroes. Including Adam Strange and Animal Man and Atomic Knight, who are exploring Brainiac's satellite, which appears to be lifeless. But then Brainiac wakes up and is about to destroy them, but they explain to him what's been going on, and he realizes this is bigger than villain action. So he has a plan as to what they can do to contribute to the resolution of this crisis.
Which his plan is Darkseid.
Yep. They got to go visit Apocalypse and meet with Darkseid.
All right. So then, Chris, what happens next?
Well, while all this is happening on Earth, we've seen the darkness that we talked about, and we find out that the darkness isn't night. It is just all of those shadow demons. And the shadow demons come and attack, and this is where we really see the increased lethality of these shadow demons, where they no longer, it's not like a burning touch. It's if they touch you, they destroy you.
Oh, that's right. They start killing off a whole lot of heroes.
Yeah, we've got heroes that are fighting back. Now, the shadow demons themselves seem to cause more damage, but they also can receive more damage. They can also be killed, too. So got a lot of people fighting. You see Cyborg, Aquaman, Aqualad, Blue Devil, Geo-Force. This is where we see Dove from Hawk and Dove die. And this will set up ramifications for later on in DC Comics. We still see the comatose Spectre, and this is where the magics get together because we have to wake him up.
Yes, Charles, here is your moment.
Yeah. I don't know why that stuck out to me, but it totally did, and I enjoyed it. So as people are fighting, what's the end result? What's the end climax? How do we wrap up the whole final battle?
There's so much going on here. It's
yeah.
You know, you've got everybody throwing powers right and left. You've got at some point the magicians achieve their goal, which sets it up for the powered heroes to face down the anti-monitor. And sandwiched in here, you've got Wally West finally figuring out that Barry's gone forever.
Because he finds the ring in the suit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And they find Psycho Pirate flipping out. He's trying to pull the suit from the rocks, saying, you said you would something, whatever the Flash promised
you. You would take me with you. You said you would take me with you.
That's it.
Yep. So the magic users get all their magic together, and they gather up all of the shadow demons. They save everybody that's been dying on the Earth.
That's right. It's an energy cage of sorts.
Mm-hmm. at which point then I want to say that's when Alexander Luther opens up the portal back to the positive matter universe, mm-hmm. so that they can push Earth back through.
That's right, because that's when it's revealed that it had been pulled over to the antimatter universe. That was, man, so much to keep up with. And
Oh, yeah. Well, and all of this leads into the big climactic moment where essentially everyone focuses their powers through Dr. Light, and she fires one massive beam at the antimatter.
And it tickled him. He still
and
won.
And she's been absorbing the power of a star at this point for several panels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they just kind of nuke him.
And that worked. Finally. At this battle, I was thinking, how many times can we beat him?
It's false ending after false ending, because we see the anti-monitor dead essentially on the cord, but then his little honey pot of shadow demons he calls to him to absorb their power. As the last of the heroes are making it through the portal.
Right.
Earth has made it through the portal. The last of the heroes are making it through the portal. The anti-monitor comes back, and boom, you just lost Wonder Woman.
Of Earth 2.
Yep.
That's right. He shoots her. He grabs her. I forget exactly how he...
He shoots her. Death ray from the mouth. He gives her the old doomsday.
Right.
So,
and then, but then they take him down.
Yeah, they do, because what you have left then is you just have a smattering of heroes left. Firestorm is getting Kid Flash and Psycho Pirate. He's booking it as the portal's slowly starting to close. Then you've got Lady Quark and the two Supermen and Superboy Prime. So Superman of Earth 1 or of Earth 2 knocks both Superman of Earth 2 or Superman of Earth 1 and Lady Quark out. Gives them to Superboy Prime, says, hey, get these guys out of here. I'll deal with the anti-monitor. Superboy of Earth Prime, he looks back as he's taking these two, and he sees this Superman fighting on his own, and the anti-monitor turns himself to kryptonite, and Superman doesn't care. He's still hitting him with everything he's got. Superboy is like, I can't let him do it alone. He's like, I don't have anything. He doesn't have anything. I'm going to stay here and help him. He throws Superman and Lady Quark through the portal.
Right.
Just before it closes, Alexander Luthor comes back. Then you find out that Darkseid is viewing things through Alexander's eyes.
Yes.
And Superboy Prime goes in to help Superman of Earth 2 defeat the Anti-Monitor. So as these guys are punching and throwing planets at him and destroying him, they've broken off his exoshell, or his armor. And then Darkseid finally, it's all that's left is the anti-monitor and his energy form, and he's just coming at him. And Darkseid's like, yeah, it's time. And he pushes a button, and he sends the energy of Apocalypse through Alexander Luthor.
Yeah, So
right into the anti-monitor, what's left of the anti-monitor.
So the devil kills God.
Yeah. And just when you think it's over, because it fires him into, I want to say it's, isn't it a sun?
Something
or
like that.
An anti-sun or something like that, that they shoot the anti-monitor into. You think it's done, and then you hear this disembodied voice say, Superman, I will not die until you die with me.
Mm-hmm.
And all that comes left is basically the floating energy head of the anti-monitor. And Superman of Earth 2 flies right at him, screaming, I've had enough, and blows him apart. Just with one solid punch. And then Superboy and Superman are both left with what's next. We have nothing. Everything, all this energy is starting to ripple outward. It'll come and it'll destroy us. What do? We just face it. And that's when Alexander Luthor opens up his pocket dimension and says, hey, look who I've got.
Look
and
who's in my pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Lois Lane from Earth 2.
Living me, which was, that was a little creepy though, right?
But basically, we're setting up a quick little happy ending for these characters who have no place in the world to come.
Yeah.
Now, on that, Mike, just, I want to take us out of the story just for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you think that was to give those characters a happy ending, or do you think that was a hedging bet?
I don't think it was hedging bets. Everything I recall about the time, DC was firmly committed to destroying the multiverse and never bringing it back. And
I think the plot required these characters to stick to the very end and be there as part of the solution to the problem and you know, destroying the anti-monitor. But then once that's been done, what do you do with them? So this creation of the pocket universe was a way to get rid of them. And bringing back Lois of Earth 2, you know, original Superman's wife, was just simply a little bit more fan service, a way to make us feel a little bit better about how they all kind of end up.
Yeah,
so,
I agree. You
know, and that being said, looking forward to the next 10 years or so, when and big ass spoiler here, when they turned Superboy Prime into a villain, that just broke my heart.
Yeah. Infinite Crisis is what he's talking about, Charles.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, me the last few weeks railing about my issues with BVS.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I feel like I'm Superman of Earth 2 and Superboy, because that's what turns Superboy evil, is they're stuck in this pocket universe and they can see out and they can see everything that happens in the 90s and things that happen to superheroes and everything. And they don't agree with the direction. They see that turn for the dark and stuff. So.
Okay. That's interesting.
And that leads into a story for another episode.
Yep.
All right. Well, this was a huge, huge undertaking. It was huge to read, and it was definitely huge to talk about. I know we got some editing to do, Mike, and this will probably go out in two sections. Or you know what? If you're listening to this now, you've probably heard this in two sections. If you stuck with us to the end, we very much thank you. Most of our stories are way shorter than this, but it was such a pivotal moment in comic book history that we definitely needed to tackle it, and it broke us into the DC universe without having to use Alexander Luthor to transfer over from Marvel to DC. So I'm going to wrap it up here. You know, you can find us at Giant Size Team Up Network, giantsizeteamup.com/panel/X panel, blogtalkradio.com/panel/X panel. Actually, it might be PXP on Blog Talk Radio. You can email us pxp@giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we've got new things in the works with voices and being able to leave voice messages and being able to get a hold of us. But next month, we'll be back with another story. We'll give you the overview of why you should go read it. You'll go read it, and then you'll come back and join us for when we go in depth. For the crew, that was Chris Wisdom. Thank you for being a guest on the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Find him over at Breaking the Panel. Thanks to George for being on with us, even though we've lost people through the show. They came back, you know, because on this show, death doesn't matter. You will go back up on the show. Thanks, George, for sticking with us tonight. And thank
you betcha.
To Mike for being in. Mike will be back with us on the next episode, bringing the context that we need so much. So till next time, go take a nap, because this was a lot.